Hey, this is Cinqua Walls, and you are listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast. Don't be afraid.
Welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, number 141. Today we will be talking about Teen Wolf Season 6, Episode 9, Memory Found. This is the penultimate episode for the first half of Season 6. And as usual, joined by Natalie. Hey, how you doing?
Hi. I'm doing well.
Yeah?
Here we are, about to be Episode 10. This is Episode 9. And not knowing when the show's going to come back, or if it's going to come back, if they've just decided to not go to 100 episodes and leave it at this one, seeing as they aired a promo for the finale, which is not correct. As far as we know, we've still got 10 episodes, because they are shooting right now.
So. And we know they're still writing and everything, so...
They're doing the competition of, like, you know, last chance to have a walk-on role on set, so that was a thing. Karen, how quickly could we go to Los Angeles and have a walk-on role on set?
Who do we need to talk to
make this happen?
We've got some people. We've got some people we can reach out to. Damn, if I had more money, like, I would do it.
Yeah, I don't think that we can do that. but it is sad that there will be no more chances to muscle our way into Teen Wolf. I don't think I'd like to be on video, but...
Oh, no.
No, on camera.
I'd like to be behind the camera.
It's okay. You've got to lie in a morgue bed and everything. It's all good. Don't worry.
That's true. You got to pretend you were dead in a tank.
Yeah.
Anyway, and we all got slaughtered in the
hallway.
In the hallway and the elevator.
Good times. Yeah. If you don't know what we're talking about, by the way, remind us to dig up all of the photos from our last set visit, because we have quite a few that I think, like, were never posted on mass because we didn't have an Instagram account at the time that we took them. So, yeah, we'll do some throwbacks to that if anyone hasn't seen those. Not that they're that interesting. I don't know. They're interesting to us. Let's move on from that, shall
we? But speaking of, if you would like to get in contact with us, at NATW Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. It's also our Gmail account, and you can hit us up on Tumblr at notanotherteenwolfpodcast.com. So I really loved this episode, like, a lot, and I'm really excited to discuss it. But before then, let's talk about our quotes. We're a little biased this episode. So ours is from the same character. Three guesses who.
They can't talk to us, Karen. They're listening to this after the recording is done live.
It was sarcasm, Natalie.
I know. I made a tweet today that was meant to be ripping into Donald Trump, and someone thought that I was being serious and didn't understand that I was being sarcastic. So that was good. I had to explain to them, no, I wasn't ragging on Supernatural. I was actually being sarcastic about Donald Trump. But that's okay. Perhaps it was not clear enough. But moving on from that.
I think our wit is too great.
Yeah. Anyway, it's Theo, just so you all know.
It is Theo.
We love him, and I'm sorry. It's happened. It's happening. It continues to happen. Mine was in the scene... Actually, do you want to go first? Because yours is sort of chronologically before mine.
Yeah, true. So, remember how last week we were like, what happened to Theo? Like, is he still there? Was he taken? We don't really know. They answered that question right at the beginning of the episode, because Sheriff is looking around and all of his deputies are gone, and he's like, they couldn't have taken everyone, and Theo just goes, they didn't, and he's still in his jail cell.
And he's so pissy. He's such a little diva. God, I really like him, Karen. He's so good. I know. I just want to give Cody Christian a hug.
He's like a mini Peter. Like, yeah. He's got that diva quality.
I love him. Can we write to him and ask him to be on the show? Why hasn't he been on the show?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, I'm going to do that tonight.
Okay.
Yeah. I love him. I love him so much. And I know that he's very nice and very beautiful, and I don't know how to handle that.
And very smart.
And very, very smart. He's very good. I hope he does really, really good things with the rest of his life as an actor, because he's exactly the kind of thing that I want to follow. Yeah, like the way he approaches his stuff is exactly the kind of thing that we really like, like, rather than actors that be like, I don't know, I just read the script and do what they tell me. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's the best. So, anyway, carry on.
What's your quote?
Oh, mine was the scene when, after the sheriff gets taken. So has the sheriff been taken? Has that definitely happened? Like, there was a lot of green smoke going on in that fight, and yeah. So he's gone. Sheriff's gone. We haven't seen him reunite with Styles in the Netherworlds or wherever it is, so whatever. When Theo and Liam are getting out of that police station and they break into the cop car and they've got the key safe, that entire scene, I feel like if someone told me that was completely ad-libbed, like it was improv, I would not be shocked. It had a real vibe to it, a real naturalistic bitchiness, and just everything about it was really funny and really fantastic. But when Liam's like giving him the keys and it's like, that's not even a car key and stuff, he says, I really feel like you're not even trying right now, Liam. And just the way that he says it is just, it's so like of the moment and perfect and so funny. It's not like overly pointed or anything like that. It's like, it's so real. Like, it's so naturalistic.
Yeah.
So funny. And I was just like, this is the greatest moment of my life. So, I loved it so much. And yes, there were a lot of amazing moments of the episode to do with the, you know, the real senior pack, the leads, like Malia, Styles, and, Scott and Lydia, like in the flashbacks and all of those big moments and
but it's so heavy, like you need something like this.
Lydia had a lot of fantastic, you know, bits, you know, especially when Malia's like, what are we doing? She's like, I don't know, this is my first attempt at opening a whatever rift in the space-time continuum. I can't remember exactly what she said, but the theme was so much better than I expected it to be. I was just like, is this gonna be like a kind of side plot that we aren't really caring about because we know we're so geared up on this Styles memory thing, but no, it was actually amazing. So I love them. I love them together. I feel like they're gonna be BFFs forever now, and I love the bit at the end when they're like about to fist bump because they're both bros, and even though they hate each other and want to kill each other, they still achieve something together, so they have to fist bump.
Yeah. Oh, it is so good. Well, let's talk about that now, because I kind of broke this up into two parts. We've got the Liam and Theo stuff, and then after we're done talking about that plot line, we'll talk about Scott, Lydia, and Malia. And the reason why I did this is because this episode in particular was actually fairly linear, and usually when Teen Wolf has an episode, there are like 3 to 4 plots, and you're kind of jumping all around, and sometimes they all come together at the end, and writing a sort of straightforward recap or going through discussion points can be a little difficult because you are jumping around so much and it kind of breaks it up. But this was, you know, A and B. It was pretty easy. So we're going to start with Liam and Theo. And Theo wants to get out of his cell, of course, but the sheriff doesn't trust him, and he sort of literally dangles his freedom right in front of him with the key card. And he says, tell me just one thing about my son. That's all the sheriff wants to know. He wants to make sure that if they let Theo out, it's going to be worth it. And Theo just says he was smart enough not to trust me. And ironically, this gets the sheriff to open the door. But I really liked it because on the one hand, Theo is admitting something, and we know he's always respected Styles' intelligence, and he kind of reveres him in that way. But it's also sort of been a contentious point because Styles is the one that kind of figured out and never really trusted Theo. So he admits this, and it kind of takes a lot, I think, to admit that. But also the sheriff opening the door, knowing this, is kind of a big deal, too. And it was a funny moment, but it was a little heavier, like, bigger than I was expecting it to be.
I can't believe that he's just so willing to be like, I'm going to shoot you in the head 5,000 times until you meet God.
Yeah.
That I'm like, he's a kid. Like, I know that you know he's been super evil, but he's a kid. And, like, given that the big thing that Sheriff hates him for, which was, you know, framing Styles for murder, when he doesn't... Maybe he remembers Styles. Like, do we know how clearly Sheriff now remembers Styles? Does he remember, like, literally everything the way that Theo did? Because he's sitting there saying, tell me something about my son. And last week we know he remembered Styles, but is he just like, he knows for a fact that that's true, but he doesn't remember the details? Or does he now remember everything? Does he remember that the reason he hates Theo is because of the murder framing? Or is it just for all of the other shit that he's pulled with Scott and stuff like that?
I think he does remember everything. I think he was asking Theo this question in order to have Theo prove that he does remember Styles. And I think he wanted to know what he had to say. And I think Theo admitting that Styles was smart enough not to trust him kind of shows that he's trying to change. He's not manipulating the situation. He's admitting the truth. And that's going a long way right now.
I really love the way that Theo did admit it as well.
Yeah. And so they do let Theo out, and this next part really shocked me, because they're like, oh, it's, you know, 3 against 5, Ghost Riders, like, we might be able to get out of this, okay? They open the door to the front of the station, and there's at least a dozen Ghost Riders there, which was shocking enough. I was like, oh my God, what are they going to do now? Run. And then, boom, Sheriff is taken. Like, it was so abrupt that I gasped out loud. I wasn't expecting him to be taken. I wasn't expecting him to be taken that quickly, especially given, like, Hayden being taken. That scene was so drawn out, and it was really good, but it was a very, like, longing sort of, I'm giving myself up to protect you so that you can get away, and it was a whole thing, and Sheriff is gone in, like, 2 seconds.
I was really shocked, like, just by even the opening of the door and having the, like, the sea of Ghost Riders there, like, if you know what I mean. And we've been asking, like, because it kind of seemed before, like, there were, like, I don't know, like, 4 or 5 Ghost Riders. We didn't really know how many there were. But now it really seems like there's a lot of them. And we're kind of getting the impression now that they, you know, and as well, we're getting the impression from the trailer as well that, yes, these are kind of an endless zombie weird thing, you know, that they're not actually, because at first it really seemed like, oh, there's 5 or something, you know, like, they are now becoming endless, and I'm wondering, like, how many of the people that have been taken have already become Ghost Riders. Is it kind of like, it kind of makes me feel like a bit like, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
And the not the Black Pearl, but the Flying Dutchman, how they get, you know, they get taken to, people get picked up and then they become part of the Flying Dutchman crew and they become, mm-hmm. you know, the weird zombie things and they can't leave the boat. They still have a sense of self, but that's kind of what it reminds me of, like, that they, a little bit, that they all get, that the people that sort of they kidnap or rescue or whatever they want to call it, become them. And I don't know, have we seen that with any other mythology on the show? We kind of had that, like the berserkers, maybe, like you can sort of become a berserker.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to think of other mythologies on the show where it's like they attack in order to like add to their numbers, if you know what I mean.
Not that I can think of necessarily. Mm. Not in a way that was like this, but yeah, I really like it too. I think that it's scary. I mean, these guys have been scary from the beginning, but now that we've seen their numbers grow, and I'm always kind of assumed there was more than just 5, but that these were like, this was like the core group, But now that we're seeing all of them kind of coming at once, and especially the promo for next week, which we'll talk about at the end, it's a battle at this point. And their numbers keep growing, but Beacon Hills' population is going down, and more people are taken, and it's just, I don't know, it's down to the wire now, so it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in 10. But before then, you know, Liam and Theo are not idiots. They know they have to get out of there. So this is when we get the car scene, which, again, I really loved. I specifically pointed this out in my recap because they've wanted to kill each other on multiple occasions for quite a while now, and yet they're forced to work together. And they have this, like, I just want to see this play out in that they have this contentious relationship where, like, they don't necessarily like each other, or they don't want to admit that they like each other, but they keep constantly having to work together. And, like, buddy cop show kind of humor, they could really pull it off. So I'm hoping that we see more of them moving forward.
Yeah. And they really, the show really does, I don't know if take risks is the right word, but they do pair a lot of people together all the time differently and always make it work. Like, you know, like they always manage to mix up the dynamic interestingly.
Yeah. And that's something I really appreciate. We saw it before with, like, Malia and Chris, like two people who don't really get to spend a lot of time together. But when they do, like, you realize their relationship and the way that they play off of each other is really interesting. And yeah, they're really good at mixing it up.
And to me, it helps make it believable that, like, you know, that these people spend time together off screen, if you know what I mean. Like, Leah and Chris, just because we haven't seen stories together doesn't mean that, like, in day-to-day life in that period, they're not very familiar with each other, you know? They it's a small town, they're a small werewolf pack, you know, they all know each other super well, it's just that we don't see it, like, 24/7. So I like when they drop into that, and then they're never like, hey, it's not like on Glee where they're like, hey, you know, Puck and Mercedes haven't done a song together before, therefore they know nothing about each other. You know, like, oh, let's discover them discovering each other. That's not like this, you know. This is like, we know that they all off screen are at that place, and like getting to drop in on moments of that for the first time is interesting.
Yeah, I really love watching it. Yeah. And, but I mean, it is rocky at first because Theo says, I'm on your side as long as it helps me. And Liam's like, trust me, I know. Like, there's no denying who Theo really is. But as they continue to work together, you see them coming together, but especially you see Theo, I think, be inspired by Liam's bravery. Liam tells him, look, we're both getting caught. You can do it while you're running, but I'm going to go down fighting. And Theo decides to join him. He could have run, but he didn't. And this was really interesting to me because we know that Peter sacrificed himself, and everything that he's done so far in the season has been for Malia. For Theo, it's different. He doesn't necessarily have a relationship with another person on the show that would drive him to want to protect them and to sacrifice himself. But I also think that between flashbacks of his sister, which we got again, and seeing the way that the pack works together and really not wanting to go back to where he came from, he's actively trying to be a better person. I kind of wish there was a little more, like, overt motivation for what he's doing, but I think it is there. I think that we've always said he's not evil. He's sort of a victim of circumstance, and he's made really bad decisions in the past. But he could potentially come around, and this is definitely him trying to come around.
Do you think it's because he's trying to make it up to his sister now or something like that? Like, or if
I've got to believe that his sister is a driving point, if not the driving point, just because we keep revisiting that. And I think that maybe if he decides, like, I'm doing this in her honor, it wasn't fair what I did to her, I want to be a better person, I want to make up for the terrible thing that I did, I'll believe that.
And you say about Malia and you know, Peter as well. I don't know. I do agree, but I think there's more to it than just Malia. I think, you know, of course that's the biggest one. It's, you know, his daughter and all of that. But I feel like there's actually more to his, interest, you know, in being a good guy than just her. Like, I kind of feel like there might be something just more general, like, you know, like more,
yeah.
More general than just her. So
I agree with that, because before, when there was that period where we were sort of like, Peter's totally a good guy, you guys, and the show kept kind of make him do terrible things, and we were a little confused. This was before Malia entered the picture. Yeah. I think Peter has always been kind of a cunning and underhanded person, but not evil, and he does,
I mean, he did like some the idea.
But he likes the idea of family, he likes the idea of a pack. And I don't think that his wanting to be stronger because of those things is necessarily a bad thing. I think he tends to use those things in a bad way, but I also like seeing him kind of come around. And yeah, I mean, I think Malia is definitely like the big thing for him, but I would like to believe, especially, that he sees the way that Scott handles things and envies him for his goodness and is inspired to want to do more. I don't know if that's true, but those are my hopes and dreams.
Yeah, I just don't feel like that he's not necessarily that self-serving, because he is definitely that self-serving, but I feel like he's just not that, I don't know, he just hasn't put that much effort into being evil, you know? Like, he just hasn't tried that hard to be evil or anything like that. So, I don't know. He's a funny one. Yeah, even before Malia, there's definitely, he's like, Peter just seems to want things to be a certain way. And he doesn't really care if it's, like, good or evil or whatever. It's kind of more about being right sometimes, like about, like, you know, oh, you're doing it wrong, so let me help you do it right kind of thing. Like, I don't know if he's deliberately misled people, like he hasn't tried to help and then it's turned out to be a trick, haha, I was misleading you all the time, for quite a long time. I think, you know, that he was either straight up against them or he was sort of helping them just because he can't be bothered doing anything else. I don't know. It's been pretty unclear sometimes about his motivation. I think right now that, you know, having Malia in the picture is kind of an easy fix for the motivation, in terms of, oh yeah, of course he's doing it for her and to look after her, but we haven't really got a chance to talk to him about how he feels about her. So, you know, or like how she feels about him, or how he feels about, when, you know, the fact that she was born and taken away, and what it would have been like, you know, what he might have been like if that hadn't happened, you know, if they'd got rid of the bad wolf or whatever, the desert wolf, and that he'd just gotten to be like a single dad with a kid who had a shitty mother or something, you know. Being said, I swear that he said once back in the day that he had kids that were lost in the fire. So I don't know if they were very young, like if they were, you know, we really don't know much about the Hale life before the fire. It's been a little bit inconsistent, but my impression is that that was a house of born werewolves, and some of the people were even not werewolves, because it was said that they were like, you know, normal people, innocents or whatever. I don't know if that was just a sort of term for, like, you know, that they were innocent werewolves. But my impression, and, you know, a lot of what's been taken from the early canon, is that it was a big, big family group, you know, a few couples, a few marriages, you know, with kids, including Talia and the nameless Hale dad, you know, and at least three children, if not more. And then Peter, who allegedly had kids who also died in the fire. So he may have had a wife and children, they were probably a lot younger than Malia. If he had Malia, I'm assuming he had Malia when he was like a teenager or something like that. Like, or some, you know, say he's, even if he's like a good 40 or 45, like his early 20s and then the fire happening 10 years later or whatever when he had small children with someone else. So if that's true, if he had small children that were killed and then he found out that he had another kid, that's, you know, something that he'd want to cling to, you'd think. But that being said, I can't remember the exact canon of what was said about who was lost in the fire, you know. But I'm pretty sure that was a thing. I might be mixing it up with Doctor Who, where he was like, I had kids. I was a dad once, I'm not anymore. But I swear that was a thing that happened in Teen Wolf. I will look.
I don't remember, to be perfectly honest. We'll have to dig into that a bit more. But yeah, I mean, good points all around on Peter. What I also liked about this scene, especially once they get to the hospital, is that Theo cuts a rider's neck and they bleed. Their blood is red. He killed him by stabbing him. He seems, they're not immortal in the same way that maybe we thought of before. And also, they can be shot by their own guns and killed, which is very useful knowledge to have.
Yeah, so that kind of ends up being quite important, that actually, you know, that actually works.
Yeah, definitely. It's so interesting, though. Like, we know that they can be shot by regular bullets and not be killed, and yet Theo stabbed him in the neck. I'm just wondering, like, what the difference is there.
I don't know. Like, so the neck cutting did not actually kill. Or did it?
I think it did. He was lying on the floor with blood pooling out from his neck. Maybe he was faking it, I don't know. Or maybe he can, like, come back from that.
I don't know. The guns are a surefire thing, so I'd just keep going with the guns in that case.
Yeah, let's use guns. But after all that happens, we see Theo start to run for the elevator, and he pushes the button, then he comes back, and he drags Liam into the elevator and closes it on him. And Liam just goes, "What are you doing?" And Theo says, "Being the bait." And he gives up his life, you know, the potential of never coming back, although I'm sure he's certain they'll find a way to get him back, in order for Liam to continue on to either hide or keep fighting or go find the rest of the pack. And I mean, this is like a huge thing for Theo, like major character development.
Yeah, and it was all so smirky and sexy, and like, he was like so smug about, hey, look at me getting the last word by being a good dude. It was so...
Yeah.
Oh. Did you expect that to happen?
I did not. I was really surprised.
I mean, if someone runs around being all like, you know, I'm only here because it suits me, blah, 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 that's like classic Han Solo, you know, that's like classic.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm going to make a lot of noise about how this is, you know, the cause is nothing, and like, I'm just trying to save my own skin, and then in the moment, you know, obviously that's when the truth comes out.
It's not surprising to me that Theo stayed and fought side by side with Liam. It is surprising to me that he saved Liam and sacrificed himself when they both potentially could have gotten out of there. Mm. Like, that is a little surprising to me. Not necessarily out of character. I'm not saying that I didn't like it, because I definitely did. But, like, yeah, I mean, they set it up so that he's like, you know, I'm going to betray you the next chance I get if it means that I'm going to live. And, of course, you know he's going to stay and fight. Like, that's just how this works. But him saving Liam, him sacrificing his life, that was a big move, and I'm really glad that he made it.
Maybe maybe it's just that he knows Styles is the smartest one of all, and so thinks that if it's going to be hopeless, like if everyone's going to get taken or screwed over, that he might as well just go to where Styles is and just depend on Styles to get him, you know, safe.
Yeah. I mean, that's literally everybody's plan.
I'm really happy about that.
That's everybody's plan at this point. Find Styles. He'll fix this.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Let's hope so. But speaking of, that is Scott, Malia, and Lydia's plan. The senior pack decides that they're going to use hypnotic regression to get their memories back of Styles. So they're using Parrish's tank to... Basically, they're going to throw Scott in there first. He's going to get super cold. He's going to go into a trance, and he's hopefully going to remember Styles. And Lydia says, it's not as cold as the ice bath you gave Isaac, which, like, immediately I was like, Isaac? I perked up. I was like, what? What? Me and I had too. To rewind it. And I was like, oh, I love that.
But also, so is this kind of a reveal? And they're definitely in the Argent, you know, weapons bunker.
Bunker, yeah. Yeah,
and so they are... So is this, like, a special thing that, you know, that they organized for Parrish to be able to use? Like, it's, like, his little safe space. It's, like, his crate or whatever, you know? And he just goes in it to, like, literally cool down, like, when he is the Hellbound.
I think,
like,
so, yeah.
Have we actually gone into this before, or is it just, like...
We've seen the tank one time before. It was with Chris and Gerard, and I think Lydia was there as well. It was when we were trying to figure out what Parrish was. But I don't think they ever explained necessarily, like, what this tank is, what its purpose is. And they certainly haven't mentioned that he's been using it this whole time. But I really like that he has. I really like that they're bringing it back. They gave it a purpose, and that... You know, it's cold enough for a hellhound, which has to be pretty freaking cold.
I mean, you know, I guess this is consistent with the whole mythology or the you know, capabilities of the werewolves or the, you know, whatever, the were-whatevers.
Yeah, so this was a throwback to 302 Chaos Rising, when Isaac had been kidnapped by the Alpha Pack, and he escaped... And he was trying to remember what happened to Boyd and Erica, and then we found out, like, they were both there. Erica's dead, unfortunately. But it was a nice shout-out. And, I mean, we've been wondering for a while, like, is anybody going to come back and all that kind of stuff? And we honestly don't know if it's going to happen, but the way that they keep throwing it back to things that have happened in previous seasons, just, it makes me so happy, and it makes... Season 6 feel like a walk down memory lane. This episode especially.
Oh, in a really horrible and not at all sweet and charming way.
Yeah.
I was just like, Isaac, ice bath. And then I was thinking of, like, Scott and Lydia and Styles, you know, Scott and Lydia going to the head of, and Allison going into the head of Styles with the ice bath. I'm like, no, that was a different ice bath. Then I was like, oh yeah, Isaac, that's right. And then I couldn't remember why he couldn't remember what had happened to him. If you know what I mean, like when he was taken by the Alpha Pack. But
yeah, I think they did some weird thing, or like he blocked it or something like that.
Yeah, and yes, but I followed up on Isaac's ice bath too, and again, like, it's kind of like, it is a little bit like, I know, like, for it would be really clunky dialogue for a show to be name-dropping, like, all these people that aren't there anymore, like, every second minute of the day, like, being like, Derek this, Allison that, Isaac, remember when Boyd did this, and, like, whatever. But it is actually realistic in real life. Like, if you're a group of people, you know, who, like, you know, hanging out in my house, we name-drop, like, my friends that live in England right now, like, 17 times a week, you know, like, so, like, oh, you know, so-and-so, blah, 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 and if I was sitting in your house with you and Kristen, you know, you'd be like, oh, did you see what Natalie said, and blah, blah, you know, that would happen in real life.
That does happen.
Yeah, I'm sure it does, and so I feel like that, like, these guys would actually talk and name-drop the names of people who aren't on screen like a lot more than we ever see them do, and it would come across as clunky dialogue if you actually put it in, but this is an example of it being kind of appropriate and not being wink wink nudge nudge, hey, remember Isaac, this was natural, like hey, you know, remember that thing that literally only happened 2 years ago, like, you know, I'm still talking about 15 years ago.
It would be totally different if, like, they saw a scarf and was like, aw, I miss Isaac, you know, versus, like, this, which is actually relevant to the plot. And, yeah, I think it's really natural. I think it works really well. And when Danny disappeared and nobody said anything about it, it was awkward. It was awkward not to mention the people that had left. So they're doing a really good job of kind of just weaving everything together now.
Maybe Danny will be there in the next episode. He's been taken and we've forgotten about him.
Yeah, let's hope so. So, Scott goes first into the tank and we kick it right off with season one Styles and that buzz cut, man.
Do you remember the drama when it showed that it was growing out for season three, and that was season three. I'm like, God, it's not like he had it for like 7 years and then they made a massive change. It was only three, like going into three after two, that people were freaking out, like, of him not keeping the hair short.
Yeah, but it, I mean, so iconic to the character, which is weird because it's just hair, but I don't know. The things that you kind of attach yourself to or, like, associate with characters, that's kind of always been a thing for him. So, yeah. But you called this scene.
It's weird because I feel like I feel like I might have been remembering it slightly wrong. Because I can't remember if he does actually give him a dog bowl or not in that, you know, when
he's... Oh, yes, he does.
He does. Okay, I didn't remember that incorrectly, right. But the first thing that Scott remembers is that scene where Styles chains him up to the radiator after he made out with Lydia and Styles was really pissed, which was exactly the thing. I was like, lol, remember that time? Because we were being all like, remember all the good times of Styles? Remember when he stabbed me? And I was like, that was the one that I said. And that was the first memory they had. And I was just like, I can't believe... That was it. We didn't get to see the dog bowl, but it was that. That was the moment of, like, I can't believe you kissed her and, like, chained to a radiator. So I'm a truth teller. I'm a frickin' psychic. is what I have to say about
and that. And I want to point out, too, and I don't... It's not true in every case, but this scene and a couple other scenes... Also, like, Lydia is there, and I think that's important to remember, like, as we go through and as we end up realizing that Lydia is the one that can finally bring him back, because her memories are important, but their memories, she's constantly there as well, and I think that's, you know, this scene, as funny as it is and as sad as it is, actually, between these two people, it still revolves around Lydia, so...
I also think it's a really interesting thing in terms of, like, kind of badness and shame and stuff like that, because if anyone who's anyone would know or should know, and if you don't, then God bless you, I want your life, that the feelings that you feel when you're remembering something bad, and not just bad, but, like, where you have done something wrong or that you are feeling shame or embarrassment or anything like that, which Scott would have been at this, like, remembering this, like, oh God, how badly did I screw up? Those memories are so strong because the feeling comes back, whereas happy memories, the feeling doesn't always come back. You kind of, oh yeah, that happened. Like, Karen, I remember seeing, you know, David Diggs and Leslie Odom Jr. on the subway after we saw Hamilton.
I know.
But I don't... Okay, clearly it comes back. But I'm like, objectively, I remember that. But I don't, like, it doesn't make my chest feel how it felt in the moment. If I remember, oh my God, remember that one time I said that thing and it was just... And then the person responded really badly or, like, I just screwed up. It feel... Like, you feel it more. Yeah, and I feel like that's interesting that for Scott, the first thing that came back was that kind of visceral memory that you would feel because he was so, you know, embarrassed in retrospect or shamed or whatever about that. And, you know, it was a really bad moment between them where they were being awful to each other and that Scott had done something wrong. So,
yeah, I will, if we get a chance to talk to anybody after episode 10, which I'm hoping we will, I'm really curious as to, like, why they chose these specific memories. I can speculate and I can understand, like, some of the connections, especially, like, the dialogue between them, why it's important to that particular person. Like, Malia's makes a lot of sense to me, but I'd be curious to see, like, how they pared it down and how they decided to go with, like, these particular scenes for these particular characters.
God, and there was so much as well. It wasn't just the little, you know, the scenes in and of themselves. There were so many, like, you know, cuts and dialogue and stuff like that. Like, you know, like, jumbled stuff that was only coming through in small amounts, which all would have been real. And God, someone better at video editing than I'm sure will or should sit down and, like, tease out every bit and work out every scene that was used, you know, like, even if it was just in, like, weird garbled flickering ways. You'd have to go over it with real slow-mo or something like that.
Yeah, and, but, I mean, that's what happens because Scott gets overloaded by all these memories, so Lydia sort of has to walk him through them, and she tells him to imagine he's in the school and that each locker is filled with a memory of Styles, and he doesn't really know where to go. He can open the memory, but, like, he doesn't really know what he's looking for, and that's when Malia comes in and says, he said you were getting an apartment together, and I remember saying to Styles something like, it's not always a good idea to live with your friends, even your best friend. But Styles said it wouldn't matter because you weren't just friends. You guys were more like brothers. And by the way, I was crying the whole time watching this. Aww. Like, I cried a lot, and this was one of those times. And I knew before the episode started, like, before we had seen any footage, anything, that we were going to go back to Motel California.
Me too, and because... I still was just like, nope. I was like, there was no part of me that wasn't 100% sure that if they were going to be doing a memory thing, that this moment would not be one that they would come back to. Like, right. I would have bet my entire fortune on this, like, double or nothing. 100%. But I was still... like, when when it becomes clear and he pulls the flare out of the locker, I was just like, oh, no.
Which was so good.
I can't do it. Like,
I loved the way that he opened the locker and you see the light on his face and he slowly reaches in and he slowly brings it out and you know what it is. But the second you see the flare and it's, like, confirmed, you're like, oh my God, here we go. Your heart's ripped out of your chest.
That episode is still freaking... unbelievable, though. Like, it's just even that scene that we saw from it. Just like, Jesus, so good. That really is one of the best episodes of television. Like, and it's just, oh, I can't even talk about it. And also, you know, just the sheer fact as well, like, the way that they actually played in all the clips and the editing, like, the structure in which they were reusing old footage was really nicely done. Like, it was really... there are many shows that, you know, depend on, like, a clip show episode to, you know, like, you know, oh, remember that time we did this? And, like, blah, 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 you know. It's often, like, sitcoms and stuff, to be fair. So it's always a bit cheesy. But they really made art out of reusing these clips.
Yes. And they weren't too long or anything. Like, you got a sense of the scene and you got to remember the important parts of the scene, but it didn't feel like they were overusing it. And even though we've seen so many flashbacks in this season so far, in 9 episodes, we've been seeing a lot of previous seasons. I love it. And I know one of our writers on Hypeable was just writing about how, I think it was the Vampire Diaries, is relying too much on this whole nostalgia thing because their season, their series is also ending. And I'm like, Teen Wolf doesn't have that problem, at least not for me. I'm enjoying every second of kind of going back and not only seeing what we've already seen, but experiencing the way that these characters are remembering those things that they've gone through. And because it's so tied into the plot and it's tied into remembering Styles, it works really well.
Yeah, it does. Like, it's, I feel like it wasn't, you know, it did not feel like it was, like, leaning too hard into it or relying on it in a way that wasn't necessary, basically, like, given that this is what they've shaped the whole story around. And yes, on one hand, they might have shaped the whole story around the fact that they knew they had to deal with limited access to the actor. But if you didn't know that, it still works, if you know what I mean. This entire story may have been completely shaped around the idea, you know, behind the scenes of needing to keep a character feeling relevant while not having access to the actor. And that's like a behind the scenes issue that they're like, right, how do we write to fix this? And if that is the motivation of that, then they've done a really unbelievable job, because I feel like in 10 years if someone watches the show and didn't know anything about it and it's like, Dylan O'Brien, isn't that kid that just won that Oscar? I feel like they wouldn't know that that's why this happened, if you know what I mean. And it could not be. Yeah. I don't know quite what came first with the chicken or the egg, but, you know, it could have been that they planned this for a character. They could have planned this for, you know, this is the story they wanted to tell and they needed to fit a character into it, and Styles happened to be the one. I think that it probably was written, you know, in to take into account that issue with Dylan's schedule. But I think that it has held up as a story very much.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This season so far, I really love it, and I think they're doing a great job. And they're working with what they have, and they don't have a whole lot in terms of the availability of Dylan, but they're making it worth it, and I'm really enjoying it. But Scott's heart rate drops too much, and they have to pull him out of the tank. So now it's Malia's turn. She can take the cold a little bit better. And the way that they get her to remember her memories is that she's in the library and she's going through books. And I thought this was really interesting, especially because Malia's memories of Styles, like, he's helped her with homework and he's somebody that I think she looks up to intellectually. It makes sense that her form of going through memories would be books.
Well, it's interesting that Malia also has the memories, you know, she has this memory that about the apartment. She has this memory that he was the first person she made a connection to. How much memory do they all have right now? Like, you know, is it that they remember nothing? Can they not, like, do they have a mental image of, in their mind of what he looks like? You know, have any of the others got memories in the same way that Malia had memory of, you know, apparently the apartment and stuff like that? That was a little unclear.
They definitely remember some things, but I think that it tends to come in, like, flashes versus whole memories. And so she can still definitely remember. Well, she knows that she has a connection to Styles because they figured out that he was the one that helped her in the basement when she was chained up. And I think that she can have the memory of the apartment and still not necessarily remember everything that they've gone through together. Just like Lydia knew that she loved Styles and that they had a connection and they all kind of figured out that this person was missing in their lives, doesn't mean they have the whole picture. They're trying to get the whole picture right now.
Yeah.
So we see one of Malia's main memories is from 407 Weaponized, when the Supernaturals get sick in the school and Styles has to leave them to save them to figure out how he can, you know, fix this. And Malia asks him, "You're coming back, right?" And he says, "Yeah, I'd never leave you behind." And this memory is strong enough that it begins to open the rift, but she starts freezing, and so they have to pull her out. But I like that this was Malia's memory because of her whole, like, I would leave all of you guys behind except for Styles, you know? It's very significant to their dynamic.
Yeah, for sure. They're really, like, Styles and Malia is an interesting, you know, conversation that we've talked about a lot. And in terms of romance and stuff like that, you know, there's also, there's lots of other questions, you know, to be asked if the, you know, Styles and Lydia thing is so prominent, which they both, you know, obviously address in this episode, whether it's going to ever be talked about, like, what Styles and Malia were, you know, and why, and all of that kind of thing. So, And, you know, how just, you know, not that that's what the show's about, you know, but it would be interesting to see, for me to either talk, see the girls talk about it, or just to see Styles and Malia talk about it, about just how, you know, just as an example of how, you know, relationships can work and, like, what it means about your feelings for various people and stuff like that. I would just like to know, like, what's in everyone's heads there about that, you know, that relationship and the kind of the dynamic of it that is so important yet so changed.
Yeah, I love this actually, because I think the majority of other television shows would have instantly pitted Lydia against Malia. And they don't even step in that direction here. And I think part of it is there's just so much else going on, but it's a really good example of positive female friendships, which you do not get a lot on television shows when there is a boy that's between them. But this just, it works so well. And I think that you can understand that Styles and Malia had a thing, and that the thing that they had was good, but that they're moving in different directions now. And I think that you can, like, I personally love Styles and Malia together, but I still like Lydia and Styles together. So, you know, he has to choose, obviously, and I think that he has, and not everybody's going to be happy with that decision, but I think that they've written it in a way where, and it makes it easier for me because of this, where Malia is okay with what's going on and the feelings that Lydia and Styles have for each other, and therefore I'm okay with it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Because if she was super upset, then I'd be upset on her behalf. But
yeah,
everything is okay. So Lydia, they realize Lydia is the one that's going to get shit done. So she can't go into the tank because she's still very much human. So they need to hypnotize her. Let me tell you, highlight of this episode was Malia taking a blowtorch to a candle. I feel like this is the perfect metaphor for, like, how she approaches life. She is the blowtorch to the candle that is life. Oh. And I just really loved it.
Yeah.
And she tries to read the script.
Oh, the script. I'd literally forgotten about it until this moment of Lydia just taking it off her and being like, yeah, no. That's
Scott
not,
has
that's
to
not
read
happen. So, she's, I don't know how she keeps doing that all the time. She's so funny. It's so good. Yes. Good.
I love it too. But and as funny as that was, I really liked that once the script is in Scott's hand, like, it turns serious again. And he reads it. And Scott can be a bit Malia like sometimes, you know, he's been awkward and ridiculous in the past and kind of aloof in a lot of ways, but he knows what's up right now and he knows what they have to do. And so he reads the script and his voice helps put Lydia in a trance. And so she watches moments from her life on a TV screen. So once again, we're getting a different way for them to experience the moments in their life that revolve around Styles. And she remembers when she stops him having a panic attack by kissing him. This is sort of her big moment between the two of them. And the song playing in the background was really beautiful. I really liked it. The lyrics, "It's like the sun came out," just really fit the scene. And Lydia says, "When I kissed him, that's when it all changed."
And that was in season 3.
Yeah.
And that this is kind of why I'm curious about the Malia thing as well, because this is early, and, you know, so has she just, and she's kind of had other stuff going on since then, and he's, you know, had Malia, and so has she just been sitting there kind of being like, about that ever since? Like, what is, because we definitely had that moment of like, oh, okay, now she's in love with him, like a few, during last season, you know, during the issues with the Dread Doctors, and they had one of those shots in her memories of him coming to get her from the Dread Doctors. And we've certainly had a few moments of like, oh my god, now she's fully decided that she's in love. But yeah, I'm just curious about that, basically.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that it was the moment that changed everything. And I think when it happened, we all realized how significant it was, but nothing necessarily came of it right away, which still makes a lot of sense in my mind, because I think Lydia saw him differently in that moment, but she still had to process what she was seeing, and she still had to process her feelings, and they were friends by that point. So it's not like she necessarily wanted to jump into a relationship, and they both had things going on. And, you know, of course, everything in Beacon Hills is literally life and death. So there's not a whole lot of time to be like, okay, maybe we should figure this out. And I think the fact that she, and by she I mean the show, made it happen so organically really kind of is, it plays to their favor. So
yeah,
I like that she's sort of been sitting on this for a while, and I think it makes them potentially coming together in the end that much more fulfilling, rather than they kissed, oh, I guess I am in love with you, okay, let's be together. You know, it's a bit more natural.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So she remembers when Styles was taken, and, you know, he says, I love you, and she says, I never said it back. And that's when, you know, the room starts shaking, the tunnel starts shaking, they see a light, they go out into the hallway, and a person walks toward them, then it fades to black, and then you hear her go, Styles? And it is potentially the cruelest thing they've ever done to us.
Yeah, would it have killed them to have, like, to have shot for episode 10 and then use the scene, like, in this episode, like, you know, just quickly, or nah. But
yeah.
At the moment, it's just an alien.
Yeah. This is what I was telling you before, though. Like, it's been such a long time. And this isn't necessarily, like, I'm not ragging on the show. I've loved the show from start to finish. But it's been a long time since I was like, I need the next episode, like, right now, or I might spontaneously combust. After I finished watching episode 9, that's how I felt. Like, I need episode 10 right now.
Yeah, it is definitely one of those moments. The big, yeah, like, I also am like, okay, I need it right now. I need it today or tomorrow or right now. And, yeah, it's really... Oh, it's really happening. Mainly because I'm so worried about what's going to happen in the next one. But
yeah.
Yeah.
God. But good thing is, we both watched the promo for next week. And the big showdown is beginning to happen. And like I said, it looks like this big battle. Just everybody is out there. Because you've got the Ghost Riders. You've got Tank Wolf. You've got the Pack and everybody. And it felt like, you know, the Hogwarts battle scene in the movie, because it's just everything has come together to this moment. They have to battle it out. They have to see who's going to win. And good news, Styles is back.
Yeah, because so, I was like, watching the whole promo. That's like, awesome. I mean, we know he's in the episode. We know he's in the episode. Are they going to show him in the promo? Like, what's going to happen? And then he says... What does he say? He says, because he comes in this big moment and hits someone with a bat, and he kind of says, bad guy, right? I didn't misread that. And it was just like, oh, they just timed it so well. It was,
Did he hit somebody with a bat? I missed that.
Yeah, that's what,
like,
it was.
I missed that it was a bat.
Yeah, you see the bat before you see him. Like, everyone's fighting and you see the bat swing, and then someone goes down. And he's like, oh, bad guy, right? I didn't misread that, like, about whoever he knocked out, so...
I missed the bat. I don't know how I did that, but...
Oh, really? Awesome. Maybe I hallucinated the bat. Maybe I just wanted it so much that I made it up. No, I think it happened.
Yeah, I believe you. So this winter finale is called Riders on the Storm.
Oh, and it is it?
Yeah, and it kind of sounds like maybe this is the end for the Riders. Like, why would you name a title after literally the Riders on the Storm if it isn't, like, the finale for them? So I'm kind of wondering if they're not going to be a part of 6B.
Well, I really don't know what's happening, because I assumed 6B was going to be really a continuation of 6A, but as we discussed, like, they were kind of writing 6A, not necessarily knowing that it was the end, whereas this one that they are writing knowing it's the end, so...
Yeah.
You know, because they were filming 6A while apparently not knowing that it was the end, you know? So, now they will be, so, you know, I don't know if that this story is appropriate for that, or if it was planned to go all the way through, or what, so...
Yeah, basically, unfortunately, we don't know what's going to happen to Styles in this next episode. We don't know if he's going to be in 6B. We really don't know anything about 6B, in fact.
Literally nothing.
I think...
I know Ryan Kelly's been on set, and Lyndon, I think. Like, that's it. Like, I literally don't know any, like, anyone else. Like, you know, Posey's not really been on social media. Like, I assume he's there. People talking about filming, it's not been many, like, not many leaks or, you know, reveals. Maybe it won't be until after the finale is. Maybe they don't want us to know, like, who survives or what happens, which is sort of fair enough. But there have been no set pictures or anything all that much from on set showing who might be there.
I don't mind. I kind of like that we don't know, mostly because they're able to bring somebody back, like, I would love to be surprised in the moment. Rather than my dream about Derek. Yeah, like, rather than being like, oh, Daniel Sharman was spotted on set, like, I just want him to pop up in, like, episode 15 and be like, hey, guys, what's up? Whatever. You like my new scarf? Yeah. I would die. And yeah, that
I could pull that off.
Yeah.
I've seen a couple of shows manage to do that and, like, manage to not put their name in the opening credits, you know, either, like, you know, they're only credited at the end of the episode because they don't want it to be a spoiler, and that they've managed to keep their, like, presence on set a secret. So if they could pull that off, that would be great. I'm trying to remember the last show I followed that really managed something like that. I don't even remember. I was pretty shocked by Nishiko on this, this show, but I was... Like, I'm trying to think, like, God, whenever Glee had a guest star, they freaking screamed it to the rooftops. I'm trying to think. Yeah, it's been done, for sure. So I'd love if they did that.
But it's also so stressful, because you're like, what if Dylan's not in 6B, or, you know, we don't know where the story's going to continue here. Is it going to be a whole new set of mythology? Are they going to really try to wrap up, like, make it a more human second half where they wrap up relationships and kind of focus on school and moving on versus like a big bad or something. I don't know. Hopefully though, we will find out eventually. And if we find out, if we're, you know, happen to be able to talk to somebody and write something up, we will definitely let you guys know. But next week looks like it's going to be good, and the season so far, I've been really impressed with it, so I'm definitely looking forward to Riders on the Storm.
Yeah, for shizzle. go back and watch The Bat, Karen. But yes, it's really good. I'm excited. I'm stressed. So, news. Karen.
Yes.
The design specs, the drawings, have been released for the Teen Wolf Funkos. What do you think?
Yes, they have. I forgot about them until, like, right this second. Okay, so my expert opinion, that's what I'm assuming...
The Funko expert.
...you want to know. Yeah. I am the Funko expert. I have a fuzzy Chewbacca now, by the way.
A Funko fuzzy Chewbacca?
Yeah, they're flocked, and so they're fuzzy.
Oh, that's really weird.
I like it. He's cute. He's got a crossbow. Anyway, distracted. I'm pulling up. I want to look at them again before I give my expert opinion.
Okay.
I haven't stared at them.
And these are just the flat drawings, the design catalog drawings, not the actual prototypes. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so we're only getting three right now. Hopefully there will be a lot more. But we've got regular Scott McCall, werewolf Scott McCall, and Style Stilinski. Werewolf Scott has his little jacket, which I really like. He looks
jacket?
Good in it.
Link it to me.
His,
I'll Google it.
I've got it right here. You don't have to scroll down too far for it.
Okay, yeah, I got it.
But he's wearing his little, like, you know, his green, like, army-ish
American
kind of
flag,
jacket.
The one with the patch on his shoulder, yeah.
He's wearing that. I don't know if they've got that detail on it.
Oh,
but
maybe it's not that. Maybe that track is a different one. I know the one you mean. Anyway.
Yeah. And then they've got Werewolf Scott with the red eyes, which is pretty cool. And his face is all werewolfy.
His hair's Danya, very short in the normal one. Anyway, yeah.
Danya pointed out fairly that he's pretty light-skinned in these. So that's... but these are just drawings, so maybe that's something that they'll take into consideration.
Yeah, that's...
when they make it.
Yeah, that's certainly something. Like, Funko skin colors are often really weird. And even, I think there was some controversy about, like, for example, the, American Minister for Magic in Fantastic Beasts, like that Funko, mm-hmm. and she's a, I think that wasn't Halle Berry, was it? It was someone cool.
No,
I can't remember who it was. But it was, anyway, it was a black woman, or a mixed race black woman, but the skin colour, even though the skin was technically quite light, looked really white, like pinky white, as opposed to like a lighter skinned black person in the Funko, and people are like, what? So it is like the skin colours with this plastic is quite difficult, or at least they don't always get it right on Funko, so if that is the thing that concerns you, you could possibly very nicely tweet to Funko saying that you've seen the Scott McCall Teen Wolf ones, and just are they aware to make sure to show that he's Mexican, basically.
Yeah.
That very nicely, not angrily.
Yes.
Just because they are a bit... Because he's not, you know, he's not... It's not really a matter of, like, literal darkness versus lightness. It's kind of, like, tone and stuff like that. And especially the werewolf adaptation one, the drawing looks very pale. Like, it looks very pale pink, as opposed to... like the different skin tone. So
yeah,
it looks more kind of like Derek, like what a Derek one would look
it
like.
It does. It really does.
So
like if you just told me that was Derek, I would believe you.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't necessarily look like Scott with the werewolf.
It doesn't have like a wonky jaw either.
Yeah.
Aww. I don't know how you would do that on a Funko.
That would be awesome if you could.
Very, very politely just let Funko know that you are concerned about the representation of Scott's Latino heritage in the Funko, very nicely.
And the cool thing about Funko is, like, they listen to people, and they do a lot of Twitter Q&As, they are very aware of their audience, they don't always get things right, but they try, and so I think they'll be receptive if they hear people saying this.
Yeah.
And then the third one we have is Styles, and he's wearing a hoodie, he's got a backpack, pretty straightforward, he's got long hair, so this is definitely, like, not a season one, well, of course, Scott has red eyes, so it's definitely not a season one kind of thing, but, yeah, I mean, I like him, I like all three of them, I'm excited, I'm definitely gonna own all of them, like, no question, but I... want more. Like, there's so much more you can do, not only with the characters, but even some of the bad guys that we've seen. Like, can you imagine owning, like, a Kanema? That would be
really
cool.
I really like the mystery minis. I actually like the model design of, you know, the mystery mini, like, the ones where you pull, like, from a box and you don't know what one you're getting. They can do really big ranges of those, and it's only for the most popular ones, but there's really good Supernatural ones. Like, I prefer the Supernatural mystery minis to the Supernatural Funkos by, like, a lot. So I think Teen Wolf mystery minis, like with like 40 different characters, would be really awesome.
That would be so. I would spend so much money on that.
For that, but I would like.
Yeah, but I really hope that these are popular enough to warrant a second wave, because If we only get these three, like, I'm going to be happy, but it's not going to, I'm not going to feel fulfilled. I'm going to want more.
Posey's going to be so happy to have an action figure of himself, even if it is a bubble-headed one.
Yeah. He's going to love it. That's awesome.
So that happened, Funko.
Yeah.
Now, I have a little bit of feedback from Facebook. We got a message just before we came on the call.
Yeah, I saw it. It was very nice.
Yeah, so I'll pull that one up. And there was a few good Twitter replies after we watched the episode, you know, with Danielle on the live tweeting. So this one is from Laura Mauro, or Mauro. I'm really sorry. I don't know how to say your last name. Dear Karen and Nat, I really loved the episode Memory Found and how it was not only a trip down memory lane for all the characters, but also how well it was shot. It was an episode I think I can watch over and over again because it showcased how important Styles really is, not only to the show, but also to all the characters. The stuff with Lydia's memories was so good and pulled at my heartstrings, and it made it even more clear that Styles and Lydia are endgame. I agree with your point last week that once you listen and do podcasts, talking to other people about the same shows is a very different experience, but I love this show. I found out about this show at NYC Comic Con 2016, so just last year, so the NYCC last year, and wound up sitting through the panel, Teen Wolf panel, because I wanted to see Shadowhunters panel, and the trailer hooked me, and hearing the actors talk really made me want to watch, so I binge-watched the whole show in about a month. Now I'm about to start rewatching 3B so I can hear your older episodes. Keep up the good work, Laura. Thank you. That's very nice. I feel like I've seen your name for longer than that. Like, maybe you were following Hyperbole for other reasons or something like that, but I feel like I've seen that person's name before.
Rewatchable. I think she listens to Rewatchable.
Yeah. So there is that. But, yeah, thank you very much. That's very nice. And we are glad that you are listening to our older episodes, and I'm too embarrassed to deal with that, going back and listening to them myself. But, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's probably never going to happen. Well, although I have been thinking very deeply about once Teen Wolf is over, like, we're definitely going to go back and rewatch the series and, like, do... not, like, episode by episode, obviously, but, like, maybe take, you know, an episode or two per season and discuss it. And, like, I get so excited thinking about it.
I feel like if we do that, that's the thing. I feel like if we do rewatch, then I'm going to have to listen to our episodes to see what we said and then be like, hey, remember when we said that? How stupid, if you know what I mean.
Oh,
and
that's going to
be
true.
So embarrassing and terrible. So... maybe we can get someone else to do it for us. I don't know.
Yeah. I'll do it.
I wasn't going to say it, but you said it.
Yeah. We love Mai. Mai loves us. Mm. She'd do it.
But yes, so that was that. Let me have a very quick look on Twitter for anything else. We have, so last week's episode was the Memory Found. No, this is Memory Found last week with Blitzkrieg. Sorry. Cassandra Palliard said, what a killer ending to this week's episode. When my DVR cut it off, I screamed. Oh, the feels. But she also said, and Nazis seeing riders bugs me as they appeared as cowboys. Medieval hunters would make more sense in the context. Show saving money? ? As in, like, why did they appear to the Nazis as cowboys in that look as opposed to, you know, something... current of the culture, or not current, but, you know, current of the mythology in that country. I don't know. Probably just because we know that that's what the Riders of the Storm look like for us, and so that's what we get. And yes, probably part of that is budget, like, oh, we can't make up a whole new costume, but, you know, it also does make sense that you would get... that kind of thing looking to be the... of a certain mythology, of a certain region or something like that. Like, that's a pretty common thing about mythology, that things appear differently in different places. You know, like, I don't know, I can't even think. Like, yeah, like something mythologically looking relevant to the people of wherever that is taking place as opposed to...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's my main take on that. I think that it is probably realistic that it would have appeared differently to them, that they might have appeared to look like hunters from the region as opposed to American Wild West riders. Shelby, who's social media, has said Theo's joined the Liam defense squad. He'll have to fight Mason for top spot, though. So I think that was in response to me saying... it was in a response to a tweet saying, looks like Liam had quite an effect on Theo. That was Danielle being subtle. I later went on and said that I think that Theo is now my OTP. Because I can't keep things subtle.
Wait. Theo or Macrissa?
I don't know. There's just so much potential, Karen. I don't know. And... that was, just quite a few people joined us for the live tweet, and then lots of people looking forward to next week, and Lydia and the, you know, waiting to hear her say I love you, and all of that kind of drama. So, yeah, should be good.
Yeah, very cool.
Twitter moments... is showing me a story from the news of science. Scientists create first human pig chimera. Seems unnecessary. Seems irrelevant, seeing as we're on the episode talking, you know, we're on Teen Wolf and chimeras are part of what we do. But Salk Institute for Biological Studies in California led the work on this milestone study. These embryos paved the way for growing organs for transplants. Scientists have created an embryo that's part human, part pig. This seems crazy. I understand what they are trying to do in that they are trying to create a way to farm organs for transplants without relying on other human donors. But it's also very, number one, gross to think about. And, like, I know science goes past gross. But number two... it's also not particularly fair on the pig-human chimera to be farmed for organs either, in my opinion. So that's very gross in many ways, basically. But that's the thing that's happening in the world.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd mention it, seeing as I just saw it and we are on, you know, a show in which chimeras were quite a large issue.
That is true, that is true.
So, give us your thoughts on the human pig chimera, should you want to.
Teen Wolf's Big Bad Season 6B.
Yeah.
But other than that, wraps it up for this week. So, yeah, definitely looking forward to next week, though. So we'll talk to you guys then.
Yes, we will. All right. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Bye. Step on up to the realness. Let's be wild. Yeah, let's be wild. Yeah, let's be wild. Yeah, we are the world is one. Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.
My quote is the one that I texted to you from Theo, but I feel like people are going to think we might be focusing on the wrong thing here.
He was so clearly the MVP this week, though.
I know.
Oh, it's so great, though. Oh, Natalie, I really love the show.
Are you okay?
I know we've been through a lot, but, like, I love this show.
Oh, don't be sad.
I'm not sad. I'm actually really excited. I haven't felt this excited about Teen Wolf in a long time. Like, literally cannot wait until episode 10. Might die if I don't get it soon.
I think that it's going to not be good. I mean, I think it's going to be tragic.
I'm really afraid.
I think that they're going to find him and that he is going to be killed in the process of saving everyone else.
I feel very
strongly that that's what's going to happen, and I feel like people are not prepared for it.
No, it's...